Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon, good evening to everybody. I am welcoming you to Building Bridges to and Communicating from Authentic Self. This is Rachel. Hope everyone is doing well today, and thank you very much for being on the call. I'm really excited to have you here today, and we're going to be exploring how we can more fully live authentic lives by challenging patterns of thought and behavior that we've created as a result of past experiences. Then we're also going to spend some time practicing some communication skills and noticing how communication plays such a really powerful role in the expression of our authentic selves and communication with others. So I'm very excited to share with you some of these tried and true techniques that are going to really support you in living a more powerful life and communicating more powerfully. So you'll all have a chance to be on the call to ask questions and to work in your breakout group. But before we get started, I want to let Abigail say hi and give you a little info about logistics.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. This is day two, and wherever you are, I hope you're having a great day. I hope the weather is wonderful. I'm just blown away here in Southwest France. I'm having such a good time, and I'm really looking forward to Rachel's input today. So this is really, really great. Let me just mention, if you have a question, as you may or may not remember, all you need to do is to push 1 on your telephone pad, and that will show us then that you have a question, and we can call on you if that works. And if not, then, you know, we'll give you a chance later on then to come back to that. If for some reason Rachel's in the middle of something and it just doesn't work, we won't forget you. But so you press 1 when you wanna raise your hand, and you will have a chance to be working in small groups. I think Rachel will be deciding whether you are in pairs or whether you're in bigger groups. It's really her thing today. So she'll let us know as we go along. So, I'm going to actually get things going and just introduce Rachel, if that's okay with everybody. As you may remember, if you were on the introductory call, Rachel is a trauma recovery and relationship coach, and based on her desire to foster community intimacy and connection with people, she's dedicated much of her time to understanding relationships and communication. The manner in which we relate to people is extremely crucial to improving the overall quality of our life, and so Rachel has understood that and has spent a lot of her life dedicated to exploring that. So whether she's working with survivors of sexual abuse in her workshop that I mentioned, which is called Beyond Surviving, or with individuals who are seeking to improve their communication skills or their relationship skills, Rachel supports her clients in overcoming patterns of thought and behavior that have prevented them from leading powerful, authentic lives. So this fits in very much with the work that we did last week on survival personalities and getting to know our different sub-personalities. And I hope you had a wonderful week meeting them and working with them and linking up with them, et cetera, et cetera. Rachel developed her trauma recovery and relationship coaching programs based on her learning, her personal insights, and she's been successfully working with clients for the past 4 years. She has an MA in counseling psychology, and with this training in human behavior and cognitive development, she provides a distinct perspective and an approach, a special approach for her coaching clients. So I think with that brief intro, because I know Rachel has lots that she wants to share with you, why don't we get going here? Rachel?
Great. Thanks, Abigail. So, yeah, where we're going to start is thinking about the communication that we have that goes on internally. Ultimately, our goal is to be able to interact with others powerfully, to communicate our needs and our desires to those who we interact with on a day-to-day basis, whether they be the most intimate relationship, a partner or a lover, or somebody who you just cross paths with, you know, at work, you know, a coworker or a boss. So, but before we do that, we really want to take a look at what's going on in the conversation we have with ourselves. We have a very particular way of interacting with our experiences. We're actually wired to assign meaning and interpretation to every experience that we have. The mind is set up, the brain is set up this way. So whether it's in response to something that someone does or someone says, we really have a craving to explain why things have gone the way they have. And, you know, we need that. We need to be able to navigate the world by interpreting what sorts of things generally happen and generally mean, right? When somebody, you know, says a particular thing, if our experience has often been that that represents or that means a certain outcome, that's helpful. We want to build upon that. The problem is that most of the time, our initial interpretations, our initial meanings, really have much more to do with our own history, our own baggage, our fears and our false beliefs, than what is actually going on. And so we're kind of interacting, we're in the same room with people, but we're very much in our own heads, having a conversation with ourselves about what they're doing, what they're saying, and what it all means without actually being in communication with them. And now the tricky thing is, on a neurological level, the brain really likes to reinforce pathways that are already wired and resist creating new ones. So it's very quick to go to the meaning that's already been rewired and reinforced many times. So as you have been, you know, growing up and having experiences and being out in the world, you've come to believe and come to think very particular things about relationships, about other people, about the world in general. And sometimes those things are very, very helpful and useful to you as you navigate your way. A lot of the times, they're not. And so what happens is, you know, we get into a situation, say that boyfriend or that girlfriend doesn't show up on time for the date, right? And we immediately go into the interpretation that suits us the best, the one that we've just really had in our back pocket all along, and we go to it right away. It doesn't even take any thinking or any noticing before we're upset and thinking that they don't appreciate us, they don't respect our time, or you can't count on people. And there we are having the conversation, and the person walks in the door, and this is the conversation that's going on in your own head. And so, of course, the way that you respond to the person is going to be a little bit abrupt or harsh or negative. So the first thing, the first step that we need to take in order to live more authentic and powerful lives is to check what I call the meaning-making machine. Now, I didn't coin that phrase. It's actually out there. It's a widespread idea, but it really makes sense. We kind of have this part of us that's just always turned on. The motor is always running, looking for meanings, making meanings, interpreting, or I sometimes call them, you know, creating our stories, all right? And so once we notice that that is what's happening, we really have to accept that we're actually at choice about how we interpret situations than we may have initially believed. And that can be sometimes the most difficult step because it means taking responsibility for how you're showing up in the world, for how you're responding when things are happening to you, rather than just kind of sitting back and saying, well, that's just the way it goes, that's just the way it is, I don't have any choice here, all right? So how do you begin challenging this meaning-making machine in order to create room for authentic connection with others and yourself, right, by tuning in to what's really going on? So there are basically four steps, and so I just want to go through those kind of quickly, and then we're going to practice some. I'm going to give you an opportunity to practice with each other, and Abigail, I'll probably bring her in to just kind of demo it a little bit. But the first step is to identify the what happened of the situation. It's like the bare bone facts. Strip away all emotion, strip away all interpretation, and just get down to what happened. Okay, so in an example of the date not showing up on time, the what happened is the person didn't show up on time. The person is late, right? My date is late. And that's really all that happens, okay? Everything that comes after that is interpretation, okay? So that's the next step, is to figure out, well, what are you making it mean? What is your interpretation that's trying to explain why this thing has happened or why the person said what they said, okay? And really, most of the time, we are going to go to reinforcing ideas that we have about ourselves or about others. And, you know, it becomes kind of this self-fulfilling prophecy. If you have an interpretation like, I'm not worth anyone's time, then you're just going to kind of see that out in the world. You're going to experience that regardless of what the person is doing. You know, the guy could show up or the girl could show up with a bunch of flowers, and the reason why he was late was because he decided spontaneously to stop and buy some flowers for you, but all you're going to be able to see in that situation is, I'm not worth your time. Okay, so you have to tune in to what's going on inside. What is the story? And oftentimes, just kind of getting quiet for a minute, you'll notice. It'll kind of just pop up. So once you've noticed that, once you've seen, all right, I'm interpreting this situation to mean that I'm not worth anyone's time, the next step is to actually challenge your interpretation, to not just say, well, okay, I guess that's it, said enough, bottom line, we're done. It's to get into the practice of challenging the initial false belief, and when you do that, you are actually weakening the neuronal connections rather than reinforcing them. So your mind, on a very neurological level, has lit up the neuronal pathway that holds the memory or that holds the idea, I'm not worth anyone's time. And when you pause and say, hold on, I'm going to challenge this, I'm going to take another look, that neuronal pathway is weakening. And once you start to notice, okay, well, maybe there was a lot of traffic, or maybe he was stopping to get me some flowers, or maybe I have the time wrong and I'm actually way too early, you can take it to the absurd. You know, maybe there was a big tornado in the middle of Manhattan all of a sudden, and he had to work around it. But what you start to notice when you look for alternative explanations is that your first thought isn't necessarily the truth. It could be. There's always that option that it could still be true. But by challenging and looking for alternatives, you are breaking the pattern of repeating the same meanings over and over and over again. And the next time you're in a situation where somebody shows up late, your wiring, it may light up. It may just go boom right there. I'm not worth anyone's time. But now you have a secondary wiring that says, oh, wait a minute. I remember this. The last time that happened, that's what I thought, but it turned out to be he was buying me flowers. So you're starting to do the work of challenging the mind and challenging the stories and the meanings that have been running you very much so without your awareness, okay? Now, once you do that, you actually... Oh,
can I jump in a little bit there just to say something, Rachel?
Yeah,
I
sure.
think it's so important what you're underlining here, this thing that we all do. We all have beliefs about ourselves, and because of experiences that we've had as young people, as children, and perhaps even traumatic experiences, we have beliefs often that are very limiting. And as you say, these get stuck, shall we say, in our programming. I mean, they're in the neurons. And so we keep falling into them unless we bring consciousness and awareness to what is the interpretation that we are bringing to any situation. Anything that happens, what is the the belief that jumps up that we are not able to see unless we bring our awareness and our desire to look. And this one that you've mentioned, which is I'm not worth anybody's time, is pretty widespread for a lot of people. I mean, it may not show up exactly in those words, but it's that belittling belief that we're not good enough in some way. And unless we challenge it, which is what Rachel is suggesting here, the biological programming just repeats itself over and over and over and over again. And it's interesting that if we do, as she's suggesting, as you're suggesting, Rachel, to challenge it, we start to create new pathways within the brain. And I think that's just so exciting.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is, to me, thank you for that, Abigail. That's absolutely on point. This work, for me, really became exciting when I realized it's not just about your emotions. It's just not about your thought life. It really is, on a biological level, doing some different work. And why that matters so much and became so intriguing and amazing to me is that in some ways I thought, all right, well, if this thought, it's my fault, right, which is one of mine that I walked around with for a long time, is kind of just this thing that's in my brain and it's just been wired there, then it loses some of its power. It really lost a lot of its power to me when I began to recognize that the repetitiveness of I'm not worthy, it's my fault, was because this wiring was just kind of doing its thing. It wasn't good, bad, or wrong. It's just doing what it was wired to do, right?
Exactly,
actually had the choice to say, all right, well, I can keep this wiring. I mean, I could do that. That's definitely one of the options. Or I can start figuring out what needs to be done in order to challenge that. And I'll say one of the greatest ways I've also found, aside from these three steps, is the fourth step, which is once you've identified one of your stories or one of the ways that you tend to interpret situations, by actually getting into conversation with somebody else, particularly if they're the person that you've kind of been running the story on, it creates a support network. And, you need to be careful about who you choose, right, to give your stories to. They're kind of like pearls. They are personal. They are meaningful to you. And point in fact, I'll just say this as a quick aside, many of our meanings were created in moments where we needed them to survive. They came up as a way to explain a situation that was very painful or that was so overwhelming or so confusing that we just had to hold on to something. Oftentimes when I'm working with people around abuse, the it's my fault, story really comes up because to not take the blame would mean to recognize that your, parent or a loved one is capable of doing something terrible and mean and bad to you. And that thought at a young age is much more difficult to consolidate than simply blaming yourself.
Exactly, so, because that, as we mentioned last week, just to kind of recap for people, is what the survival personality is there to do. You have to survive. And surviving doesn't just mean physical survival. It means a psychological survival. How to make sense, which is what Rachel's talking about here, making sense of madness.
Right, absolutely. So, in some ways, our stories, our interpretations are like good friends. We've had them for a long time. They have served us well at certain points in life. But there does come a time when you are now living out those stories in a present-day experience where they're no longer useful. They're actually hindering you. They're holding you back from expressing your authentic self or from connecting with others or communicating powerfully. And so when you engage in conversation with somebody and you go up to them and say, hey, you know, I noticed that when you showed up late, I really made it mean, or I really thought to myself, I'm not worth your time. And I notice that I do that in a lot of situations, because most of the time, you know, the meaning that we apply in one place is really something that we take with us all over. So we have kind of a global view of it. So it's not I'm not worth his time, it's I'm not worth the time for anyone. And once you've done that with somebody who you trust and somebody who you're well connected to, then, you know, you kind of have given up your game. And they will oftentimes notice when you're doing it more quickly than you will and can support you and kind of snapping you out of it, saying, hey, you know, I know this is what happened, but are you in that story again about not being worth, you know, anyone's time or not being good enough? And so you kind of get a colleague and a partner to do the battle with you. And and just in case, you're hoping that one day all of your stories, all of your meanings will just poof, go away. Well, the bad news is they don't. And so they don't. You are stuck with them. But what does begin to happen is the frequency with which they kind of rear their ugly heads definitely begins to decrease. And when they do show up for you, you begin to develop the skill of recognizing it, acknowledging it, and knowing what steps to go through in order to kind of keep things, balance things back out again, so you don't, you know, spiral down into story and just find yourself at the very bottom where, you know, life sucks and nobody loves me, right? So, so that's the general idea, and with one caveat, okay, and this is a very important piece, that, you know, our initial interpretations are often tied into something negative and something that's been reinforced years and years and years. But we still have to be aware in relationships, and we still have to be paying attention to what's actually going on. So if the guy shows up late the first time and your meaning-making machine goes on and it says, I'm not worth his time, and you do the steps and say, well, all right, let me just step back a minute. Let me look for other possible explanations. And you're good, and you move through that moment. Awesome. Now, if it's the 10th time that this person has shown up late, we need to get into conversation about that, because there actually is real behavior that's happening over and over and over again, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you're not worth his time. There may be something else going on. But you need to have the conversation and notice that, all right, well, maybe I am not as high on his priority list, and let me figure out if that's actually really what's happening, or maybe there's something else going on. So I hope that makes sense, because that is a really important part. I'm not asking you to just kind of give everybody the benefit of the doubt every single time, no matter what they do. That is, I'm definitely not saying that or giving anyone license for that. It's more a matter of learning to just kind of in the moment, pause, take a second look, and really be open to other possibilities until it's really starting to look like there's a repetitive pattern, there's something that's going on that really needs to be addressed. So I want to walk someone through this process. So Abigail, I'm probably going to use you.
Okay.
So I just want you to kind of imagine or bring up to memory a moment when, you know, something happened where you just remember it did not feel good. You know, it brought up anxiety or fear or frustration. And just tell me, you know, kind of what happened.
Okay, hang on. Let's see, a situation with frustration. Do I have any of those? Let's see. Of course, I have millions of those. Okay, hard to choose. Well, let's see. It probably would be a situation with a guy. You want me to tell you more?
Sure, yeah. Tell me all.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Experience. As best you can, tell me that first part of just kind of the what happened, just the experience.
Okay, let's see. Well, I can think of a situation, for instance, actually I write about, this is something that kind of clicked off my book even. You know, I was in this relationship with this guy that I thought was the love of my life. I mean, seriously, just wow. You know, perfect, all the things that I always wanted. And I guess he would do these things or say these things that suddenly I just felt my whole body, I just falling into like abandonment cycle, you know. I mean, now I can see it. But at the time, it was horrible. It was this traumatic feeling of like falling down into the middle of some cyclone, you know, that's all black and awful, and I just, you know, I just felt like I was going to be abandoned. I felt like I wasn't loved. I felt like he didn't care. I felt like all of that he didn't care, that he didn't really care, despite what he said, that it was all just, you know, that it was suddenly things had changed so fast, and I couldn't understand why. Voila.
Got it. So do you recall, like, a particular moment or a particular thing, a very specific moment or thing that he said where you fell into that?
Let's see. Well, it would be more, you know, that he would suddenly say he couldn't come next weekend, or next weekend he was doing something, you know, that I thought was not very important or something like that.
Okay, so what happened, the facts of that experience are he said, I can't come this weekend.
Right.
I'm not able to come. Okay, and then you just told us all of the meanings that you came up with, you know, he's abandoning me, he doesn't really care, he's not really in this, I don't really matter to him. So if we were to take a look at what other interpretations you could actually have about what happened, what else might you notice? What else might you see as being possible explanations for why he wasn't able to come?
Now that I have, you know, shown the light on the situation, shall we say, through all the work with psychosynthesis, I realize that the part of me that would fall into that was that poor little girl, the little child of quite young, different ages, you know, that was always afraid of being abandoned and kind of left by the wayside by her family, which in a way is what happened to me. But when I was an adult, you know, I just figured I was an adult now. This wasn't, you know, this doesn't happen anymore. You don't fall into little childish ways in your head anymore. I mean, I was an adult. I was in my 40s. Give me a break, you know. But now I can see that I did fall into this, you know, the little survival personality jumped in with, oh my God, this is dangerous, this is bad, and you know, it was just the end of the world. Whereas now I can see that this person needed my, meaning the boyfriend, you know, needed to organize his own life. He had a number of things that he was unsure of. He was nervous about certain aspects of our relationship. I mean, as it kind of came out later, not with him, but somebody else said to me, you know, you're kind of like a racehorse, you know, and I'm used to the donkeys on the beach that plod along, you know. So he was scared. He was scared.
Right. There you
and
go.
And now I can see that. I see that with certain men, you know, that I now that I've taken my own power and my own life in hand, I can see that some guys, they're terrified by that because they like the old pattern of they're in charge and the woman follows, you know, blindly, et cetera. And I don't do that. So I can see that. He had fear, he had his own stuff, he was pulling back in his own way. There were lots of things going on for him that now I can see. He wasn't really lying to me. See, for a long time, too, I really felt he's lying to me. He says he loves me, but he doesn't. And now I realize that that's not true, that I was, you know, as you say, making my own, you know, my own interpretation, and that was based on, you know, past trauma. And so he was just trying to do the best that he could. Now, I also see now, as a little aside, you know, just with all of us here, that this is somebody that even if he came back to me now and said, I love you dearly and blah, 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 I'd say, thank you very much, that's lovely. But, I mean, I know I can't create a life with
right.
him now. So now I can see that clearly. So it does take that, you know, spending the time to look deeply at your own programming, because so much of what I'm hearing when you teach and you talk to us today about this is that we're not present, and we can't be present because we've got so much stuff going on in our own
heads. That's right.
That's absolutely right. I often say
that, you know, you get two people in a room, and most of the time it's their stories that are talking and not themselves.
Yeah.
And so I really appreciate the example that you just shared, Abigail, because you hit on a couple of different things. And the first is, you know, looking at what actually might be happening for the other person. You know, he has a life. He has to get things done. He has responsibilities. But then also noticing he has his own stories, too, right, about what it means to come out, what it would represent to come and spend time, and all that stuff. So once you start really tuning in to your own stories, your own meanings, part of the fun is you start to see it in other people. And that becomes really powerful because when somebody responds to you in a way that just seems really off or really odd, you almost start to pause and say, hey, I bet they're in a story. They're making some meaning about what I just did or what I just said. And so instead of responding in kind with your own stories, you can actually pause and say, you know, I'm just wondering what you think I just said. And that simple question oftentimes will bring somebody's story right up to the top, right? And you'll be able to address that rather than getting into the loop of just kind of, you know, going back and forth with each other. Well, I think you said, I think you said, I think you said, that kind of stuff, where it's not actually getting at the stories, but it's just your fears trying to kind of cover up what's actually going on underneath. So I'm going to give everyone here on the call an opportunity to practice these four steps. Well, it'll be three because you won't be getting into the fourth step of sharing and having a conversation with somebody else. So for the sake of continuity, I'm going to go ahead and try as best I can to keep you in the group that you were in last week, just so you don't have to start off, you know, from scratch getting to know the person who you're going to be working with. And just as a reminder, I just want to remind you that as you're sharing, as you're in conversation with each other, really practice those skills of, you know, reflective listening, active listening, receiving what the person is saying, without, as best you can, giving, you know, advice or judgment. Ask questions. Acknowledge what you heard, what they're sharing, you know, brought up for you or made you feel. You feel or what you notice, but just kind of try to stay outside of that realm of kind of the teaching, judging, advising space. And we're going to have 10 minutes for this so that each partner will have 5 minutes to kind of talk through and, you know, really support each other here and, you know, try to help each other get down to just the facts in that first step, the just what happened. Right, as you noticed with Abigail, I kind of kept pulling out, like, okay, but what was that specific moment? What was that specific thing? And then allow them to explore all of the different meanings that showed up for them, and then brainstorm together the alternative meaning, the alternative interpretations. You know, let your partner go first and see what they come up with. But if you're noticing an alternative interpretation, it's definitely all right to kind of toss that out there as an option. So. I'm going to go ahead and put you in groups, 5 minutes for each partner, and I'll come back in at 5 minutes and tell you to switch, and we'll go from there. So have fun with each other. Okay, so welcome back. I hope everyone had an opportunity to take a look at the meaning-making machine that you are, and, you know, appreciate the fact that we all do this. You know, I think one of the things that made me very excited and happy when I started doing this work was that I was not alone. There are lots of people. Every single one of us is, you know, kind of in this space of creating meaning, looking for stories. And they're very common stories. There are actually quite a few that all of us have, particularly when it gets into the world of relationships. So, you know, I hope you had a good chance to talk through an experience. And if you have any questions or comments about this concept, do go ahead and raise your hand. I'll just answer those. I'll just give a few seconds to wait to see if anyone has any questions or ran into any trouble. You know, if you just had a hard time even coming up with, you know, what happened and what your story was. And if not, we'll kind of move on along here. So, great. So we are, we've just taken a really clear look at the kind of communication that happens internally. And I've got to tell you, if you really latch on to this concept and start tuning in to your meaning, your stories, the frustrations and upsets that happen in your daily communication with others will go down dramatically. Without adding any new skills about how you actually talk to other people or what you actually say and do with other people, just by monitoring your own self-talk, you will experience more freedom, more power in your relationship. But as I said, a lot of times it's the conversation you're having with yourself about what is happening that causes fear, anxiety, frustration, than what is the person is actually doing. So then what happens when you do need to get into conversation with somebody else, though? There is really something that you want to share and that you want to communicate. So that's where we're going to head next. We're going to get into talking about how you communicate your needs and desires and experience with other people. So one thing I've noticed as I've worked with couples, as I've worked with people around relationships, is that we often are communicating on just a very top surface level. Most of the time we just kind of blurt out what we want, and that's good to some extent, except we usually blurt out what we want without very much information as to what it would look like, how often we really want it. It's just not very clear. So we might say to our partner, I want you to spend more time with me. Okay. Now, point in fact, that's a very surface level comment. It seems like it might be really intimate and revealing and emotional, but it is kind of just at the top level. And it's also very incomplete because your partner does not know what spend more time with me actually means. She will have her own interpretation and understanding about what that means, what it would look like, and you have yours. And let's say, you know, 90% of arguments in relationships are really about, I asked you for something and you didn't give it to me, and the other person is saying, you asked me for that and I did give it to you, I just didn't give it to you the way you wanted. And the reason that happens is because we don't make clear requests. Really, this thing that people should just kind of figure it out, they should just get it. Particularly if we've been in a relationship for a long time, we start holding the other person accountable for reading our mind and just knowing what it is we like and what we need, and we don't have to actually address or explain anything. And so those are some really big traps that cause relationships to become kind of unstable and bring in discord. So when you are actually wanting to communicate a complete message, a full idea, fully express yourself, the first place to start is actually going back to the what is happening and expressing that to the person. So it might be when you don't follow through on this agreement that we have. So I'll try to come up with something specific. When we don't see each other for a whole week, okay, let's just say you're in a relationship like that where you maybe see a person once a week, but you're really wanting more time, okay? When we don't see each other more than once a week, that is what's happened. That's what's going on. You don't want to get into it like when you don't spend time with me or when you don't show up or when you don't ask me out. That's all blaming. That's all judging. That is going to make sure that conversation goes nowhere. First thing you want to do is get clear about what is happening, okay, and state it in a very objective way without your interpretation. Another thing is to look for what your thought is. Now, this actually mirrors, you know, your story, your interpretation, and sometimes what I really like about this step is you notice that your story is really what is the problem in this situation, and it has nothing to do with the other person. And you can just kind of stop. You don't have to, you know, get into any conversation with them. You just have to do the work yourself, except for that fourth step if you want to share your story with them. But let's just say that the thought that you have, when we don't spend more time with each other than once a week, I think this relationship is going to fail, right? Maybe that's the thought you have. And so you want to share the thought, all right? And then you want to get to the feeling. Now, the feeling is not, I feel that, because what word comes after that statement is always you, and that is not going to work. Okay, the feeling really is just that, a feeling. I feel scared. I feel upset. I feel frustrated. Okay. And then we get down to the intention. What is it? Why are you having this conversation? Now is when you come into saying what it is that you want. But you're going to say it in a very particular way. You might say, I want to spend more time together, as a way to just initially state the intention. Then you're going to get very specific. How often do you want to spend time together? Does talking on the phone count as time together? Does chatting count as time together? Do you want to see this person 3 days a week, 2 days a week? And it sounds very formal and business-like, but what actually happens is you open up a dialogue where the relationship then becomes a place where, you know, real needs can be met, real expectations can be set, and you're not just counting on the other person to just somehow figure it out. And it's quite a relief and quite a gift to the person that you're in conversation with when you say things like, I'd like to spend more time together. Could we please go out at least 2 times a week? The person then knows exactly what you need, exactly what you want. You've taken the guesswork out of it for them, and that's a really nice thing to do. And then the person has an opportunity to actually think, okay, could I do 2 days a week? No, I couldn't, but I could do 1 day a week and make sure I chat with you every night. You know, so then you can get into a dialogue about what works, about what doesn't work. The other real benefit of using the clear request is that it's measurable. After a couple of weeks, if the person has agreed to seeing you 2 times a week and that hasn't happened, then first of all, you don't have to get into story, right? You check yourself, right? Well, he's not spending time with me 2 times a week, what he said. That means, you know, I'm terrible and he hates me. You have to keep that in check. But then you can go back to the person and say, hey, you know, we had this agreement about spending two nights a week together, and I'm just noticing that's not happening. I'm wondering what's getting in the way. And, you know, that question right there, I'm wondering what's getting in the way, is so powerful in relationships because it takes away all judgment, it takes away blame, and you're simply asking the person to investigate the situation with you. And they might say, well, as it turns out, 2 days a week is really a lot for me. Or they might just say, well, I've had a cold and I didn't want to go anywhere. But then you can kind of get it, you can get into the conversation about it. So the four parts of a message are really important and very helpful because they give the other person a full picture of what is going on for you. You know, when you say something like, I want us to spend more time together, and the person doesn't get that it's because you're afraid the relationship's going to fail or because you're feeling frustrated and upset, they don't really know what's at stake for you. And it's often very compelling for other people when they hear what your underlying concerns or thoughts or feelings are. Now, when in fact we hide those a lot of times because it feels very vulnerable to spit it out. But that's part of the reason why I kind of like this four-level message, because you just kind of, you know, you can use it as a tool to just kind of think through it. Let me just talk myself through this, and if I just, okay, I'm at step one, good, I got that done. Let me just try step two now and just get my thoughts out there. Now let me get into my feelings, and now let me state my intention. And one of the important things to know about the intention is that it should be positive, right? So you don't want to say, you don't want to place the clear request in a negative. I want you to stop not seeing me, right? You want to place it in the positive. I want us to see each other more often. How about 2 times a week, 3 times a week? Now, this is really useful in all sorts of realms, not just in relationships, you know. And the other thing you want to do is start listening for other people when they're making requests of you. If, say, your boss comes in and says, I'd like you to do this report, and that's all they say, then here's a really great opportunity to elicit a clear request. So you would say, all right, you want me to do the report. Is that due by Wednesday? Is that due by Tuesday? Is it due by Wednesday at 3? Get as specific as you can. And that will really save you a lot of time, too. When you have a partner who comes and says, you know, I want you to stop nagging me, well, that's not really a clear request. You got to figure out what's really happening. Maybe it's only one specific thing. And if you really get into the conversation of what would that look like to you if I stopped nagging, what would that mean, they might just say, oh, well, I want you to stop bugging me about chores. And anything else is fine. So practicing the skill of communicating using a full, rounded-out message and eliciting clear requests from other people will take a lot of the guesswork out of your conversation. Okay? So we're going. Let me just check in and make sure that everyone is kind of getting this concept, getting the idea here. So if you're not sure about kind of the four parts or how you would go about piecing it together, please do, you know, press a button on your phone and raise your hand. But I think that I'll go ahead and have Abigail model it again, and then I'll put you into your groups so that you can practice with each other. Okay? So, Abigail?
Yes?
Yes. And this will also give everyone else on the call an opportunity to start thinking about what communication are you wanting to practice? Yeah, what situation is it that a situation where you're wanting to ask for something, where you're wanting to communicate how you're feeling about something? And, you know, it doesn't always have to be negative. I'm using negative situations, but it could be something like, you know, when you brought me flowers, I thought you really appreciate me, and I felt, you know, loved and cared for. And the intention there is, you know, I really want us to just continue showing love to each other. So, you know, these skills aren't just for, you know, the hard times or the tough conversations. They're also for expressing the positive things and reinforcing the things that you want to, that are positive. So, Abigail, do you have a request or a situation in mind that we could maybe use for, you know, practicing putting together a complete message?
Let's see now. Well, I can think of a situation, well, not a situation. I can think of an ongoing relationship with a friend, a male friend that I've had now for a number of years, where just recently I've noticed this relationship is taking on a much more, I would say, peaceful, even adult way of being. So I don't have a particular request anymore of this person, though from a couple of years ago, it's true that what you're saying, you know, it would have been good if I could get out of the fact that I was so upset and angry with this person a lot. I might have been able to say things, but as you were speaking, I was realizing that a lot of what this is about is, you know, it's taking back our power and not giving it to somebody else. And the reason I think we find it confronting, you mentioned, you know, we feel vulnerable to be specific about things, is because we're afraid the other person can hurt us. But, you know, if we get to a place where really we don't give our power away to someone, they can't really hurt you anymore. And that's a real big step, I think, if you've come from a background where you've been abused and so totally dependent that you were often hurt. And it's interesting how it's that story that we give ourselves. You know, someone does whatever they do, you know, or we ask for whatever, we might get it, we might not. You know, I've asked for a few things recently, and I don't get them. And I kind of go, oh, okay, well, I guess sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you know, the clear request is not the end-all be-all of seeing what you want. It just supports you in, if the person is agreeable, it being actually what you want. So the person does also have the option of saying no, even if you ask in very clear and very specific.
Exactly. I think what I've noticed in different situations, you know, is just that it doesn't mean that I'm going to get it, but afterwards, if I take the time to pat myself on the back and say, well, at least you asked, and at least you were clear, and they don't have to give you what you want. Nobody has to give you what you want. It's up to you to keep looking, and if you don't get it from one person or from one area, you keep exploring how are you going to get your needs met. But it's not up to anybody to satisfy your needs, and that was a real eye-opener for me. So that it makes it easier now for me to ask for things, and it's true that the more I ask, the more I have it's like a numbers game, as they say, even in marketing. The more the tendency is that I do get what I want, though if I don't, it's not the end of the world.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, one of the other things I'll just point out here is I had a client who, you know, we did this exercise with, and she started out with the statement, I want my husband to be more kind to me. And so I asked, all right, well, what would that actually look like? What would that be? And she said, well, you know, I really would love if he would bring me flowers. Okay, great. So how often do you want flowers? And then, you know, she started grimacing, and, you know, she answered, you know, a week. I said, okay, great, what kind of flowers? And it was at that point that she just kind of pushed back, and she said, that is so not romantic. I don't like that at all. He should just go out and get it, and, you know, this is, I don't like this idea at all, having to tell him exactly what kind of flowers to give me. And I said, well, okay, you could ask in, you know, a vague way, and you could get the flowers, and they not be what you like, and you could just be appreciative of that. Sure, that's an option. But it seems fairly romantic and loving to me that if you ask for something very specifically and the person takes the time to actually follow through and give you exactly what you want, that seems romantic to me. So, you know, she did it, and we put together the complete message so that she could go and, you know, ask in a way that it was received not as a judgment, not as a, you know, a demand, but as a request. And as one that, you know, had meaning and importance to her. And the husband said, oh, my God, I'm so relieved. Finally, I know exactly what you want. And he was just ecstatic. And, you know, it's been like a year, and she still gets her daisies like once a week. And I just love that because it's actually, and he feels satisfied and excited that he knows he's pleasing her and giving her exactly what she wants. You know, there is a lot to be said for implicit communication. I'm not saying I want you to go out there and create a world where everything is like, please give me this by 2:00 on Wednesday. But, you know, being able to use body language, being able to use, you know, just sound, size, looks, all of that is a part of the package. It's all a part of the communication game. But when you are finding that you have something that is important to you, a need or a desire that is continuously going unmet, if you haven't asked for it clearly, then you are not yet in a place where you can be upset or where you can judge the other person or where you can begin to consider whether or not this person is capable of meeting needs. You haven't even asked in a clear way.
Yeah, I think that brings us to that, back to that thing, the point, which is if we're unable to ask for what we want, then that is reflecting something about our own story. What is it that we're pushing on to other people as responsibility, and it is ultimately our own responsibility to be able to satisfy our own needs by being able to, as you say, to ask for them. And so it brings it back to the dialogue within of, you know, why am I so afraid to ask for what I want?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. Okay, everyone. Well, now is your turn. You're going to get an opportunity to practice. So I hope you've had enough time to kind of come up with something that you've been wanting to get into communication about or to request of another person. So we're going to go ahead and put you in your group, and we'll be back in 10 minutes, so the same amount of time, 5 minutes for each partner. All right, everyone. So thank you so much for taking the time to work with each other. I hope you were able to kind of work through creating a complete message. You know, this is a really tricky model to just hit the ground running with. It does, you know, it challenges our usual mode of communication and how we generally ask for things and talk to other people. So if it feels a little bit like shoes that are too small, that's okay. It probably will. And, you know, what I encourage you to do is to just practice composing, you know, these sorts of messages, you know, on your own before you, you know, sit down and try to talk to somebody. Kind of have a dress rehearsal with yourself and, you know, kind of go through them. But, you know, if anyone really wants to, was stuck or kind of had a hard time or you have any questions about the concept, please do go ahead and raise your hand. Now would be a good time to ask any questions, get clarity about either this or, you know, the meaning-making skills that we've talked about so far. So we're just kind of coming here to the end of the call. So please do, if you have any questions or comments or want to share anything, then please do feel free to raise your hand. I really want to just thank everyone for being on the call and listening. And I want to give you a little bit of homework or an exercise that you can, you know, take with you. The first is begin kind of keeping a log of your stories. As you start to tune in to the meanings that you assign in a variety of situations, you'll really start to notice the patterns and the reoccurring theme. You'll kind of have your top five stories that you always go to. And you can really do some powerful work just by challenging those particular stories and being kind of tuned in, on guard, paying attention, present to that. And the more often you do that, and challenge those stories, again, the more likely you're going to be able to decrease how often they show up or how long you stay stuck in the story, because your brain will be rewiring, you will be weakening neuronal pathways and, you know, becoming stronger in your thought life. And then for your communication, I just challenge you to get out there and, you know, pick one or two situations and really use this model and practice walking through the four parts and stating your request clearly and really use the powerful part of this, which is showing appreciation, looking for the positive, communicating to people what's working for you and that you hope that that continues. So Abigail, I'm gonna want to chime in here at all. That's what we have for today. So if nobody has any questions or any comments, I think we're gonna start moving into wrapping up and call today.
Okay. Well, I guess I'd just like to mention how in this model it does go so deep. I mean, on the appearance, maybe on the surface, it might have a feeling that it's very kind of blanket 1, 2, 3 step, but there's so much to this actually if you really start to explore it. One of the aspects that you just mentioned is this element of being able to actually communicate your appreciation of a situation or your appreciation of something that someone has done for you. You know, when they do this, that, and the other thing, you may feel, you know, XYZ, excited, happy, you know, really looking forward to something. It gives a way of communicating to people what's working and what makes us feel joyful. And I think that's an extremely positive thing. And then it also gives us the framework for exploring and getting more in touch with these different subpersonalities. For instance, as you were saying, getting to know those stories, keeping them in a log, you know, will help you get in tune with the one or two subpersonalities that maybe are problematic, that can be the cynic or the critic, and the one that's the saboteur, the one that's always saying, well, you can't do that, or, you know, you've started a business, for instance, and you know, you're not good enough, or, you know, you're never going to get enough clients to live, or you're never going to get this, or bloody blah, you know, all that negative
right.
stuff. You know, that is the voice of the saboteur. That is the voice of the critic that is there for a reason, but is piping up always in this negative way. So this model helps us to get in tune with all those different parts of ourselves, so that we can bit by bit allow them to evolve, which is how the story starts to lose its power. So I think
absolutely.
Really wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah, and you know, I really enjoy the process of, you know, identifying what your needs really are. First of all, it's very empowering to really tune in and notice what support, what love, what attention really looks like, what it really feels like to you. Because we oftentimes know that we have a need. You know, we have a need for comfort. We have a need for closeness. But we don't really go that extra step to identify what that feels like and looks like for ourselves, let alone communicate it to anyone else. So just that of having to kind of get into your own world and think about what these things look like and feel like is very, very powerful and empowering, because you'll know yourself better. And the better you know yourself, the more easily you're able to relate and communicate to others what you need. So, you know, if you're struggling with that step about getting clear about, you know, what it is that you really want to ask for, you know, sometimes frame it in the opposite, what it is you don't want. Like, well, I know for sure, like in the example we were using about spending time together, I know for sure once a week is not it. So we got to go, that's a starting place. We have to go somewhere up from there. I know I don't like talking on the phone, so that's not going to work for me. Think about what it is that you enjoy the most about time with people. You know, do you like just being in the same space, or do you really need like actual conversation and communication happening? You know, a lot of times I find in relationships that the woman is asking for more time, and the man feels burdened because he thinks he needs to be there, like kind of entertaining her, showing up, you know, having a conversation, being in dialogue, when what she really would enjoy is, let's just be in the same space. Like, I'm comforted by being in the same room with you, even if you're, you know, doing your own work or reading a book. So, you know, getting into those, understanding those parts of you will really help, you know, enliven the relationships and bring things up, you know, to a greater level for you. So I really hope that you'll, you know, take these tools, both the ones that Abigail has spoken to and these that I think they complement each other so nicely. They really play into each other so well. So you've gotten just a really great toolkit. You are really walking away with some powerful ways to think about communication, think about your authentic self and relationships. So play with them. And if you need any support, you have any questions, you get out there and you try it in the world and it just kind of falls flat or you're not sure what you're doing wrong, so we're both here and available to answer your questions or, you know, support you as you're on using these new tools.